April 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the fight against Islamic State in Syria now includes more U.S. troops.
They actually got a missile to leave the submarine and ignite for once.
The United Nations condemns North Korea's latest missile launch. Big tech companies unveil earnings this week. A gruesome murder in Bangladesh, and also a soulful musical loss. It's all on today's International Edition. President Barack Obama is ordering a significant increase in the number of U.S. Special Operations Forces in Syria and is urging European nations to ramp up their contributions to the coalition fighting Islamic State. The additional personnel will join a team of about 50 U.S. troops in Syria. Joining International Edition from Germany, VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas explains more about the troop buildup with colleague Susan Yaki.
President, today, announced those extra 250 special operations forces going to Syria. That's in addition to the 50 that are already there. So that brings the total number to 300. Now, the reason why he says this is important is because the 50 that were there, the president says what they were doing was working. And so they ramped up the effort, hoping to make even more progress in the fight against Islamic State. Basically, the president says they're going there to train and assist and advise local fighters, and that they've done that very successfully, so they're hopeful that with more help, they will take back more territory from Islamic State.
And he's interested in the European nations also joining forces there.
Well, that was a thing. This address really was to the people of Europe. It was targeted to them, but the president also uses as a time to say these terrorists are doing everything they can to attack our cities and to kill our people, and we have got to do everything we can to stop them. So Europe, so NATO, let's do more. I think there's more that we all can do. So, yes, he uses this address to ask Europe and NATO to ramp up their efforts to do more to help in Iraq, to do more in Syria, to do more with assistance, to do more with help with training more of the local fighters who are taking this combat role to Islamic State.
After his remarks, Obama met with his counterparts from Germany, Britain, France, Italy. What do we know about those talks?
Well, a big focus will be, again, Islamic State. It's going to be sort of laying out the agenda for the NATO summit that's going to take place in July in Warsaw. So they're pulling together how they're going to approach all of this. And again, it's getting everyone to contribute more. And it's not just Islamic State. The message here is we all have to work together because a lot of these issues, they're not anything any one nation can take care of. Not Islamic State, not the migration crisis that's happening in Southern Europe, not the issues that come forward because of Russian aggression in Eastern Ukraine. All these things we have to work together on. So they're laying out the agenda, sort of getting their ducks in a row for that event in July. So that summit's taking place. And then after that, it's been a very, very full agenda for the president on this overseas trip. He will head back to Washington.
Well, I was going to ask you, as everything's wrapping up and you look back on it all, what do you think were some of the high points, or do you think the president was successful?
He certainly did pull a lot of people together. These are the leaders of major European nations. They've come together in one place, but he also went to London as part of his visit to speak more with Cameron about this, Prime Minister Cameron. He was in Saudi Arabia to talk with the leaders of the Arab nations to talk about countering ISIL and other efforts. So I would say it appears to have been very successful as they pushed the talks forward on a number of key challenges.
VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas traveling with the president in Germany. We turn now to our social media segment. International Edition's G. Abby Lee joins me right here in the studio with what's buzzing online. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
We're only a day away from another Super Tuesday election. Well, what's happening online?
Jim, there is more buzzing among the Republican contenders and their Democrat counterparts, so let's begin with Donald Trump. He wrote several Facebook posts and tweets about the alliance between his two rivals, Ted Cruz and John Kasich, and here's an example. He wrote, "Wow, just announced that Lying Ted, that's his fond nickname for the Texas senator, and Kasich going to collude in order to keep me from getting the Republican nomination." Now, in all caps, desperation. They are both mathematically dead and totally desperate. Their donors and special interest groups are not happy with them. Sad.
Well, no shortage of comments from Donald Trump. What's the public's reaction?
Under Trump's Facebook posts and tweets, it was pretty hard to find any comments supporting the other candidates or criticizing Trump's wording. But that shows he has a very loyal and vocal following on social media. Many of the comments argued the bullies have teamed up against him and that he's fighting two losers by himself.
Well, gee, you and I know there's at least one critical voice against Trump, and we talked about it briefly before the show.
We did.
And tell us more about it.
Yep, North Korea, or the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, is not a fan of Trump. There's an account called DPRK News Service with a handle at DPRK_news, which you introduced me to. It's not verified, so it's unclear whether it's a spoof or an account set up by Pyongyang. What do you think?
I don't know. It looks rather funny, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah, so in any case, one of the tweets about Trump's remarks reads like this. Treacherous hyena Donald Trump, now facing alliance of treacherous jackals Ted Cruz and John Kasich, laments he did not think of it first. The best part is the Ted Cruz name was misspelled as C-R-U-I-S-E.
Maybe they were thinking of Tom Cruise. Well,
oh, right.
Well, we don't have too much time left. Let's quickly go over the Democrat side.
Let's
What's
do that.
New there?
Supporters of Bernie Sanders are tweeting about his Baltimore rally on Saturday. He's quoted as saying, "How do we have money for tax breaks for billionaires, but not money to feed hungry children in Baltimore?" His rival Hillary Clinton is appealing to the voters' emotions, tweeting, "This might sound strange coming from a presidential candidate, but what we really need is more love and kindness." Jim, back to you.
Well, thank you very much for that wrap-up, G. She tweets for our program's account at VOA_IE, also from her own account at G. Abby Lee, and I'm out there on Twitter as well at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. The UN Security Council on Sunday condemned Saturday's firing of a submarine-launched ballistic missile by North Korea, saying it constitutes yet another serious violation of UN Security Council resolutions. A council statement said the development and testing of new ballistic missile capabilities is clearly prohibited by the previous resolutions. Pyongyang said the latest test proved the reliability of its submerged launching system. South Korea, though, called the test a failure, noting that the missile traveled only 30 kilometers instead of the usual 300 kilometers. However, President Obama, who was speaking in Germany, warned that the North continues to gain knowledge in its nuclear and missile capabilities.
Although more often than not they fail in many of these tests, they gain knowledge each time they engage in these tests, and we take it very seriously. And so do our allies, and so does the entire world. And it's for this reason why we have continually mobilized the international community to isolate North Korea, to crank up the sanctions that impose a cost on Kim Jong-un and Pyongyang.
Mr. Obama said while Chinese cooperation is not where we would completely like it to be, he said Beijing is growing more alarmed at what North Korea is doing and has become more forward-leaning in exacting a price on Pyongyang for its behavior. Bruce Bennett, a RAND Corporation Korea analyst, tells VOA's Victor Beatty that the latest North Korean launch was a partial success.
They actually got a missile to leave the submarine and ignite for once. They've claimed they've done it before, but most of the indications were that those were failures. So it partially worked, which is kind of the typical with a new missile program. They don't work perfectly when you start, and you have to resolve little problems that eventually lead to hopefully a successful program. So far, they're partway into the program, more normal for a developing missile system.
Do you detect an uptick in the pace of such testing in North Korea?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, now this is at least their fourth and perhaps their fifth test, according to what's been said in the media today, all in less than a year. That's really pretty progressive for the North Koreans. They're clearly trying to make some points before their May Party Congress that's only a few weeks out.
Well, a top senior U.S. military official told Congress just last week that he's very alarmed that North Korea could achieve its goals of reaching all of its quote-unquote enemies with nuclear weapons not too far down the road.
Certainly that they're moving in that direction. They've still got some major problems to resolve. And this missile, while it's fairly long range, the submarine would have to be sitting way out in the Pacific in order to reach the U.S. So it's more a broader regional threat that it apparently poses to South Korea, to Japan, but notably also to China.
What does the U.N. Security Council statement tell you in terms of possible further sanctions?
So far, what they've said is that it was a bad thing. Now the real question is, are they going to be prepared to do anything about it? There's also just today the report that Chinese trade with North Korea was up like 15% last month compared to a year ago. So at least as of last month, it doesn't look like the sanctions approved in early March had much bite. Now, they appear to be biting in, especially on iron and on the metals, and probably in other places. But China was reluctant to put much control on coal exports from North Korea or on other things. The key things at this stage are strengthening some of the sanctions already, and in particular, oil. Not letting oil get into North Korea, that would be really serious. But China has put some real limits on that in the last resolution.
As for the North Korean foreign minister's Saturday interview with the Associated Press, in which he promised to halt nuclear activity if the U.S. stops its military exercises with South Korea, Bruce Bennett adds that the North fails to acknowledge its own recent heavy training. A gay rights activist and his friend have been hacked to death by suspected Islamist militants in an apartment in the Bangladeshi capital of Dhaka. At least five attackers came to Zulaz Manan's apartment posing as couriers and then attacked him and his friend with sharp weapons. They also injured a security guard. Manan was a USAID official who had also worked as a protocol officer at the U.S. Embassy in Dhaka. The U.S. ambassador to Bangladesh condemned the killing. Manan was also the editor of a transgender magazine, Rupan, which is the country's only magazine for the LGBT community. The United States has pledged $10 million to aid those affected by the fallout of the Chernobyl disaster, as Ukraine marks the 30th anniversary of what is described as the world's worst nuclear accident. An April 26, 1986 explosion at Chernobyl's number 4 reactor forced the evacuation of 350,000 residents working and living in the surrounding area. The pledge comes on top of more than $400 million the United States has committed to the international effort to help Ukraine restore the site of the accident to an environmentally safe and secure condition. U.S. financial markets saw a reversal of an early day's dip in stock prices. Now we look at where the trends are going with VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino from New York.
Yeah, we're trading a bit sideways on Monday to kick off the last trading week of April 2016. However, we have come off of the lows. This is probably the busiest week for traders, as we have over 500 companies reporting this week. A third of the S&P 500 is reporting. So there really is a lot going on. On Tuesday, after the market closes, every trader, media head, tech geek eyes are certainly going to be on Apple earnings. And in addition to that, we have Amazon.com, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. So this is a techie trader's dream this week, or a nightmare, depending on how you want to look at it. But, you know, the tech sector hasn't had that spectacular of an earnings season. Google was somewhat of a disappointment, IBM. So this is sort of the newer tech here with the social media stocks and so forth. And I think when we take a look at this group, we have to start separating what are growth stocks right now and what is value. And that's the conversation that we're having around Apple. Is it a leader in innovation anymore? Is it selling the best products? Because it's not just a tech company, it's a consumer company. And the concern among traders and analysts are perhaps we've surpassed the growth stage. And for Apple right now, it's not about what's hot, what's new, but being part of that ecosystem with its apps and utilizing its services, which is a repetitive business. So I'm really curious to see for the first time in a very long time how this plays out with Apple, because it probably could be considered a mature blue chip at this point.
We are at the end of April, and as investors consider the value in all these stocks, there's an old adage we're reminded of.
And that is, sell in May and go away. And this adage dates back to about the 1950s. And essentially what that means is from September to October, anecdotally based on the seasonal trade, investors have been recommended to sell their positions. And it could be a question of seasonality. I think a lot of it is more historic rhetoric than anything else. In the summer, volumes tend to be lower as traders and analysts go on vacation and they have family things going on. So that could be why that adage was created. And you typically tend to see more activity with more money in the market from November to April, which kind of makes sense because you're coming into the end of the year. You want to see some window dressing into the end of the year. You have holiday sales and so forth. But when you look at it from an average, it really does not mean much of anything. And for the retail investors such as you, such as myself, keep putting your money in, dollar cost averaging, and set up for the long run. Don't pay any attention to these old adages, because for all you care about is compounding. And look at what we've seen so far this year, the recovery that we've had.
You can find Jill Malandrino on Twitter at Options Profits. And of course, anytime right here on International Edition. Jill, we're so happy to have you with us.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that afflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
2016 has gotten off to a very tough start for music lovers. So many talented artists have been lost so far, and it's only April. Now, singer Billy Paul, best known for his song Me and Mrs. Jones, died on Sunday. He was 80. On Me and Mrs. Jones, a number one song from 1972, Paul crooned about a love affair between a man and a married woman. The sultry song earned Paul a Grammy for Best Male Rhythm and Blues Performance, and he beat out some fantastic competitors, including Ray Charles, Curtis Mayfield, and Isaac Hayes. It was his biggest hit, and Paul would be identified with that song for the rest of his life. Paul was one of many singers who found success with the writing and producing team of Kenneth Gamble and Leon Huff, whose Philadelphia International Records also released music by the OJs, Teddy Pendergrass, and Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. Years later, in 2003, however, Paul sued Gamble and Huff for unpaid royalties on Me and Mrs. Jones, and he won. A California jury awarded Paul $500,000. Paul was originally born Paul Williams, and at the suggestion of a manager, he began to use Billy Paul as his stage name, that to avoid confusion with the songwriter Paul Williams. Paul continued to perform throughout the years. The Associated Press reports that he was lining up appearances just shortly before his death.
Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. Both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us anytime of the day or night at our website, voanews.com. We're also on Twitter. Follow us at @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Jim Harmon. I'm Jim Stevenson, and we're in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us today. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Stealing a person's idea, invention, or creative expression is no less of a crime than is stealing another person's car or breaking into their home and making off with their valuables. But the fact is that depriving people of profit from the fruits of their own imagination, what's known as intellectual property, is detrimental to everyone. Intellectual property refers to unique creations of the human mind that are subsequently recognized and protected by law, such as inventions, literary and artistic works, as well as symbols, names, images, and designs used in commerce. It includes musical performances, films, fashion, advances in technology or medicine, and innovations on existing design in every field and genre. Some consequences of intellectual property theft are obvious. Every time a customer purchases pirated film or a counterfeit item made to look like an expensive name brand, the brand's owners receive no compensation for their labors, and the customer is cheated because the value of the purchase is less than advertised. Worse, if a patient is treated with counterfeit medication, their health could suffer or they could die. Intellectual property theft deprives artists, inventors, and innovators of their just compensation, government of tax revenue, and it slows economic growth and stifles creativity and innovation. On April 26th, we observe World Intellectual Property Day, not just to celebrate the creativity of the human mind and the contributions made to the development of a society by innovators and creators, but also to draw attention to the necessity of protecting intellectual property everywhere around the world. The protection and enforcement of intellectual property rights help ensure the world will continue to benefit from the time, resources, and brain power invested in developing new technologies and improvement of existing ones, from the works of some of our most creative citizens, and from new brands and modes of production. This, in turn, fosters economic growth and attracts investment that will create new jobs and opportunities for all citizens. On this day, as we celebrate the human capacity to create, innovate, and invent, we call on all our friends and partners to stiffen intellectual property laws where needed and enforce them strictly for the sake of us all.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.